Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program.
Hello, this is Abby from Right Turn Radio, and today we are interviewing award-winning author Kate Messner about her most recent book, The Seventh Wish. It's a modern-day fairy tale about a girl named Charlie struggling with typical middle school problems, friendships, her Irish step dance costume, and family. But a bigger problem is looming, and it's creating a controversy around the book. Kate, can you tell me a little about what kind of made you write a book where one of the main characters has a heroin addiction?
Sure. Well, The Seventh Wish started, actually, as a fairy tale retelling. I live on Lake Champlain in northern New York, where we have temperatures that are 20 and 30 below zero in the winter. And one morning, I woke up on the coldest morning of the year and went down to look at the lake to see if it had frozen yet so we could go skating, and saw that the entire lake was covered with these ice flowers, these just amazing crystalline flowers made of ice, which, it turns out, science tells us, is an Arctic phenomenon mostly, when we have super, super cold air and a thin layer of ice with much warmer water beneath. The water vapor in the air crystallizes and forms these amazing flower-like, feather-like structures. And it provided this tremendous sense of magic. And it got me thinking about the kind of magic that might happen around water in the wintertime. And that reminded me of the old fairy tale, The Fisherman and His Wife, which you probably know is a story of wishes gone wrong. The old fisherman catches a fish and it offers him a wish in return for freedom, and he just says, "Oh, that's okay," and lets it go. But then he goes home and tells his wife what happened. And she said, "Well, you mean you let it go? Go back there, catch that fish, and get wishing. Wish for things for us." So they wish and wish, and their wishes get greedier and greedier. And the more they wish, the more things go wrong. So I had decided that I would write a retelling of that fairy tale, but set in a modern-day ice fishing community on Lake Champlain, and that the main character would be an Irish dancer who's ice fishing to raise money for her first solo dress. And that is a story that probably would have been okay with everybody.
Yes.
But there's one more element that's part of the story, and that is Abby's older sister, Charlie, her beloved best friend, older sister, who is in her first year of college. About partway through the story, it comes out that Abby is struggling with heroin addiction at school. And so the story does take a turn at that point, just like family lives do when a family member is struggling with addiction. And so that really was the source of the controversy. I have to be honest, it took me by surprise a little bit, because when my editor and I were working on this book, we talked about that. We talked about, is the world ready for a middle-grade novel that tackles the issue of heroin addiction? But then you look at the headlines, and this is something that thousands and thousands of families are dealing with, and kids aren't immune to that. There are children in these families, and not talking about it, I think, and my editor thought, just leaves those families feeling left alone and makes the stigma surrounding addiction worse. So we did decide to go ahead with it, and we took great care to present the story in a way that is kid-centric, that the focus is not so much on the older sister's heroin addiction, but on the impact that has on her middle school sibling and how that affects her life and how Charlie feels. You know, about everything that's happening in her family and all the attention that's suddenly diverted to her sister's issues. So that's really what the story is about. And I have to say the controversy has been, loud, I guess, but also relatively small. Far and away, the vast majority of emails and letters that I'm getting about this book are thank you notes. They're saying thank you for telling this story. Thank you for not being silent. And from many adults saying, you know, this kid's story, that was my story growing up, and I was never able to talk about it. I always felt like I was by myself, and the story reached back in time to 10-year-old me and let me know that I wasn't and that I'm not. And so far and away, the response has been positive, but there have been, some people who think, oh, gosh, we just don't want to talk about this with kids, you know, and I think that's what you're referring to early on. Actually, on the day the book was released, I got a phone call disinviting me from a school visit the following day.
Wow.
Because the school just suddenly decided that they hadn't had time to prepare their kids and that there was no way we could talk about this book for an elementary school. And then there was an email that came from a totally different librarian in another state saying, gosh, I love your book. Your book that's most, you know, among the most popular in my school library, but I'm not going to carry this one. My students won't have access to it because I don't want them to know about heroin addiction. We don't want to talk about that with kids. And so that really has been the source of the controversy and why I've been talking about it, too, because, you know, obviously I believe, because I wrote this book, that this is something that we should be talking with kids about. I hope it's an important book, not just for families who are struggling with addiction, so that those kids know they're not alone and they didn't do anything wrong because this is happening in their family, but also so, you know, kids who aren't dealing with that might have a better understanding and more empathy for their classmates who are.
Well, I was really impressed with two things particularly. One, the family is a wonderful, healthy family, which is exactly what happens with heroin addiction. It's not those people. It could be anybody. And that the daughter was a wonderfully healthy, the older sister, was a pretty okay kid. It's not like, oh, well, that's why. And how did you, I thought that was a wonderful decision on your part.
Yeah, I have to be honest. That element of the story grew out of a very personal experience. I live in a lovely, lovely upper middle class neighborhood on Lake Champlain in northern New York. And a few years ago, I came home from grocery shopping one day and was bringing groceries in, and I hollered across the yard to my next door neighbor, "Hey, how's it going?" And she said, "Terrible." And that's not the answer you're supposed to get when you say, "How's it going?" across the yard. So I put down the grocery bags and I went over and I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "I'm having the worst week of my life." Nicola, that was her daughter, just told me she's hooked on heroin.
Wow.
And an absolute chill ran up my spine because this kid next door, I mean, literally the girl next door, but also the epitome of the girl next door. She was an A-plus math student in high school. You know, she played soccer. She was an athlete. Great, great kid. She's the kid who taught my daughter when she was little how to hula hoop. Just a beautiful, smart girl. You know, at college, had started dabbling in drugs and ended up hooked on heroin. And it was chilling to me. And my first thought when she told me that was, oh, that can't be right, because that's not what a heroin addict looks like.
Right.
The heroin addict doesn't look like the kid next door, not in my mind. And that was wrong. You know, I had that idea in my head. This, you know, even though I know the statistics, I still had that idea in my head that a heroin addict looked like something other than this beautiful, sweet girl next door. And it was surprising to me that I still had that image, but it was very obvious to me that I did. And that that dissonance really stayed with me. And it's I think the main reason that this story came out when I wrote it the way that it did.
Well, yeah, and I also thought that by being so kid-centric and focused on, you know, Charlie's point of view in the world, you also explain, you know, recovery, what it looks like to, you know, a kid going to a meeting the first time, a kid who has to deal with some pretty adverse things in the family, you know, her worries about insurance and money and things like that. Yeah, I thought it was just, it was wonderful.
For family dealing with this, I think. And that was all based, you know, on my neighbor, when I was writing this book, was in recovery, and she was doing really, really well, and she is now. And so she actually, I talked to her mom, I said, "Do you think there's any chance Michaela would talk to me? I'm writing this book." And she said, "I think she will." And when I contacted her, she said, "I would love to talk to you because I want people to know. I want people to know how it happens and that, you know, we have to end the stigma. We have to talk about it more." So she talked with me on the phone for a couple hours. And, you know, we talked about, how did this seem okay to you? You're a smart kid. How did it seem okay to try this? And, you know, just the whole process of going down that rabbit hole was really fascinating and terrifying both. And so she also talked to me about the process of recovery. And I also talked with a drug treatment center, a therapist at a drug treatment center in Vermont that handles a lot of cases locally. And they walked me through the whole process. They said, what would it be like, you know, if I'm a younger family member of somebody struggling with addiction and I go when that person checks herself in, what does that look like? And so she was the one who then walked through the process and said, well, you know, they're going to check the bags and the family members are going to say goodbye. And after that happens, you know, the person's going to be checked. vacation, and you know, talked about visiting day and what that might be like, and what family members would learn, you know, about living with an addict, because it is there's a learning curve there. You know, it comes as a shock to most families when it's you know, when it's revealed that somebody is struggling with addiction, and so there's this huge learning curve to learn how to deal with that, and all the feelings that come up too. So both my neighbor and the Maple Leaf Drug Treatment Center in Vermont were incredibly helpful in talking me through that.
Well, that's great. It's really interesting. I was showing the book, having just read it, to someone who was going to share it with the Hazelden Library, because they have a kids' library where they try to recommend books for kids to read. And I felt like, you know, this is the kind of book you hand to a kid who's going through it, you know, who has an older sibling or a relative who's going through it, and it'll explain it and make them feel so much like they're not alone. And I think I felt like that was a really nice feeling, you know, by writing about it, you become part of this group that's not hidden anymore.
For sure. And I think kids who read this, I mean, I know from having, you know, heard from a lot of young readers already, they love Charlie. You know, she's
wonderful.
Your friend, you know, she's this kid who's funny and smart and you know, she worries about things, but she has a sense of humor, and she goes through all the same things that every middle school kid is going through with this added issue on top of it. And so I think, you know, reading a story like that not only can help kids who are dealing with addiction say, oh my gosh, this happens to all kinds of families. This is not my fault. You know, it's happening to me, but it doesn't define who I am. And beyond that, for kids who aren't dealing with that in their families right now, I think it really helps to end the stigma. And you see, this is what an addict looks like. You know, this is the girl next door who made a mistake and just slid you know, into this terrible situation. And so I think that's another piece. You know, it's for sure a book for kids in this situation, but I hope it's really a book for kids who live in the world and want to be, you know, kind, compassionate citizens of that world too.
Oh, nice. Having read a lot of young, not a young adult, middle school books, it was really nice to have Charlie be such an adventurous person. And you know, I loved your relationship with the ice. I mean, this is someone who understands ice, and it was just so nice to talk about, kind of pull all that in, you know, not only ice flowers, but like how, you know, how thick it is and the different ridging. And it just felt to me like, okay, this is someone who knows for ice.
That's a really personal part of this story too. I have to admit, I'm completely smitten with lake ice, you know, living right on Lake Champlain, for the past, gosh, like 20 years of my life. It's a pretty amazing thing to wake up one morning in winter and suddenly have your backyard extending for miles and miles. And it's the ice is, it really is a character in and of itself in the story, because it is very much a presence in my life as somebody who lives on the water in the wintertime in a place that's very cold. You know, it talks, and it threatens, and it's beautiful and terrifying all at once. And that, I think it's that combination of something that is beautiful and scary at the same time that really, really probably intrigues me the most. You know, we wait to go out on the ice every year, and, you know, there's this anticipation of, is it thick enough? And you see, you know, occasionally, you know, twice now I've seen the ice flowers, and it's a pretty magical thing, but also there is this sense of real danger, and I think it's the combination of beauty and danger that really intrigues me about the ice, and I think really intrigues Charlie, too, the fact that it's so alluring, and also so dangerous, and that it doesn't make promises, and there are, you know, obviously parallels there with Abby's situation.
Right, so. It looks so safe on the outside. I want to recommend that everybody look up ice flowers on the internet if you've never seen them. They're amazing. And is there something special about the age, you know, that you're 9 to 13-year-olds, where you feel like they need to kind of, they're dealing with more mental health and more outside world? Is there something about that age that particularly entices you?
I mean, I mostly write for that age group, for middle grade readers, you know, 8 to 12, 9 to 13. I think those are the stories that we read when we're really figuring out who we are in the world. You know, when you're in fourth and fifth and sixth grade, you're getting ready to cross that bridge into adolescence, and you're trying to decide what kind of grown-up do I want to be someday, and what kind of choices am I going to make, and at the same time, you haven't crossed the bridge yet, so you're not dealing with all the emotions of being a teenager, and in some ways, I think there's a level-headedness that comes with that age. One of the schools that I visited when I was on book tour for The Seventh Wish, Oxford Elementary School in Maine, every fifth grader read The Seventh Wish with their teachers when they were going through their DARE drug education program. And as the culminating activity for that unit, the kids wrote letters to their future selves. So it was Dear 18-Year-Old Me. Because even, you know, these 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds had a sense that right now they know exactly who they want to be and they have a good sense for how they're going to get there. But they also understand that being a teenager and going through high school is going to throw some barriers up and throw some bumps in that road. And they want to hold on to these ideas that they have right now. So they wrote their future about what they're thinking right now after reading Abby's story and Charlie's story, The Seventh Wish, and after going through their drug education program. And they made a video out of those, and I got to see that when I visited, and it made me cry, because looking at these 11 and 12, 10 and 11-year-old kids saying, dear future me, remember what it was like in fifth grade, remember how much fun you had, and remember what big plans you have for yourself. Remember when you read The Seventh Wish, you don't want to make decisions that change those dreams you have. It was incredibly powerful. And I think that's a really important age. It just is the age where you're figuring out who you want to be. And I think the stories that we read at that age, I know the stories that I read when I was 9 and 10 and 11 years old, really had an impact on me as far as what kind of person do you want to grow into?
Yeah. And you said you had gotten some letters you get letters from young readers. What are there some that kind of stand out, or one?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I've gotten not only letters from young readers about this book, but perhaps even more letters from adults who tell me they want to go back in time and give that book to themselves when they were 9 and 10 years old, because these are grown-ups who grew up in a house with an addict. And who felt all those feelings of being confused and ashamed and alone and, just didn't know quite what to do with that, what to make of it. So many people have told me, oh my gosh, this book would have meant so much to me back then.
Wow. I'm glad you're making such an impact with everybody. I'm glad you're letting people know about addiction, because, the more people who it just becomes part of life and what they read, they're going to get help. So thank you for being with us, Kate, and thank you for sharing your books with us.
Thank you so much for the invitation to talk with you. I so appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.